This presentation has been previously broadcast.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning and thanks for listening. The number is 888-914-9149. I give you the number right up front just because I know how difficult it can be to try to call in when you're getting a busy signal. So it's always easiest first in the morning, the first right now, as a matter of fact, and the first part of each hour is usually when the traffic is the lowest. So if you have really been trying to get in, call now, 888-914-9149. You probably have seen the news in the last 24, 48 hours about the assassination of the president of Haiti, President Jovenel Moise. And I've seen some of the videos that have been put out there, people with cell phones and windows in nearby buildings filming what appear to be troops or paramilitary guys out on the street. They showed up at his house at night, and they claimed to be, at least by some reports, DEA agents. And the net result was that he himself was killed by gunfire. So here's how it's being reported in The Sun this morning, yesterday afternoon. In light of this and in the wake of this assassination, the U.S. could send troops into Haiti after this assassination of President Moise. It is feared that the Caribbean nation could be plunged into chaos after the killing, which has shocked the world, and experts have already raised the prospect of a Western intervention. Professor Robert Fatun, who has written several books on Haiti's turbulent history, he said the situation is likely to degenerate and the country could be I need some more coffee over here, please. And the country could be plunged into chaos. And he said there could be another military intervention, as has previously been seen in the last few decades from France, as well as the United States, with the backing of the United Nations. The group, one of whom spoke with an American accent, who were claiming responsibility for this assassination, posing as DEA agents, said that they executed him in his private residence about 1 a.m. The first lady was also injured in the attack, although she has survived. Speaking to France 24, Professor Fatun says, "I assume foreign powers will be very worried about the situation in Haiti, in particular the United States. And as we know, in the previous 20 or 30 years, the UN and the United States and actually France have sent troops to Haiti because of political uncertainty and instability. If things get bad, I would assume you would probably have another intervention." He went on to say that Haitians may push back against such an operation, as many actually blame the United States and other foreign powers for their current troubles. He said, "We don't know what is going to happen. We can only assume things will probably degenerate given the lack of security, the weak police, and the rise of gangs in the cities. It could plunge the country," he said, "into chaos. And talking to some people from Haiti, there's a feeling it might also provoke a foreign occupation. U.S. troops previously intervened to oust a military regime from Haiti in 1994 on a mission called Operation Uphold Democracy. That lasted 6 months before the U.N. peacekeepers took control. And again, in 2004, French and U.S. troops moved in to Haiti amid further political unrest, which led to another coup. It saw another U.N. peacekeeping force installed and its attempt to try and control the worst of the violence with a general election that occurred in 2006. However, the peace was short-lived, and ever since, Haiti has been rocked by disasters, protests, violence, disease, outbreaks, food shortages, allegations of corruption, etc. The killing of President Moise was the latest horrific incident in the country's troubled history. So I offer you this because it's right on our doorstep. Haiti is a near neighbor to the south. And of course, given the unrest that already exists with China and Russia and Iran, this is one of those stories that I think takes on an even greater significance. So in your kindness, please remember to pray for the soul of the assassinated president. Now, very different thing I want to get to now. In Chicago, the Chicago Public Schools have announced that they're going to provide free condoms to all students in grade 5 and above. And you may say, grade 5? Why would a fifth grader need a condom? Exactly. Exactly. The Chicago Public School Boards of Education passed the plan in December requiring all schools that teach fifth grade and up to maintain a condom availability program. I'll reread that for you. The Chicago Public Schools Board of Education, presumably run by adults who should know better. I think that's an open question at this point. They passed the plan in December requiring all schools that teach fifth grade and up to maintain a condom availability program. Condoms are provided at no cost by the Chicago Department of Public Health in an ongoing effort to mitigate the spread of sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV and unintended pregnancy among Chicago public school students. This according to their website. This means that all but about a dozen of the city's 600 schools will have condoms, according to the Chicago Sun-Times. By the way, I'm reading to you from an article by Michael Faust at ChristianHeadlines.com. Those 12 or so schools only teach younger grades. So do you get that? Of the 600 schools in the sprawling Chicago public schools system, only 12 are not going to be subject to this edict because they only teach the younger grades. Everyone else, condoms. Hey, everybody. That big 18-wheeler that just rolled up, it's full of condoms for the fifth graders. Essentially, Kenneth Fox, a doctor for Chicago Public Schools, told the Sun-Times, essentially what we want to do is make condoms available for students for if and when they think they need them. When you don't have those protections and don't make those resources available, then bad stuff happens to young people. You have elevated risks of sexually transmitted infections and unintended pregnancies, and that's very preventable stuff. By the way, I have another idea, Kenneth Fox, Dr. Fox. What about just teaching the kids virtue and self-control and, you know, pay attention to the things you need to be doing in the fifth grade? That's certainly not something you need to be doing in the fifth grade or sixth grade or seventh grade or eighth grade or ninth grade or 10th grade or 11th grade or 12th grade. And they say, yeah, but it's going to happen anyway. Yeah, true. But we also say that murder is wrong, even though there are people out there who are going to commit murder. Obviously, grammar school children getting into mischief is not the same thing as murder. I'm not saying that it is, but, you know, there are plenty of things out there that we legislate against and we moralize against and we don't tolerate because they're wrong and bad and destructive, even though there are people out there who are going to do those things. So that argument that might be raised, well, they're going to do it anyway, it's just not a good argument. And yet they want to make sure that your kids, if you have kids in the school district, are amply supplied with condoms for if and when they might need it. The school district will supply the condoms. Elementary schools will get 250 condoms, while high schools will have 1,000 condoms on hand. I would expect that not everybody is going to be completely on board from the start, Fox said, but I do think society has changed. If you're a parent of a fifth grader in a Chicago public school, are you on board right now with this idea? Do you think it's a good idea for your son or daughter to have this foisted on them? Because, you know, along with the, hey, by the way, here's, what is this? This little foil, is this candy? No. What is it? And then they have to explain what it is. And then they have to explain a whole lot of other things that go along with that, if you follow my meaning, if you catch my drift. Maria Serrano, a parent whose daughter is a sophomore, criticized the plan. Thank you, Maria Serrano. Thank you. She said they are 10 years old, 11, 12. They're kids. So why is the Chicago public school system thinking about providing condoms? Well, I know why, and you know why, too. Why not provide them information and at the end give them the resource of a condom when they are prepared to use the resources they want to provide, she said to the Sun-Times. Well, she's only partly right. They don't need this, of course. Readers on the Sun-Times Facebook page were also critical. That's too young. Eighth grade, I could see that, but kids are going to be kids and play with that stuff. That's the parents' job. That's rather incoherent, if you ask me. So you're paying your tax dollars. Your school district taxes are now going to underwrite the latex industry. FYI. Now, that leads me to another story. It's not directly related to this, but you can see a kind of generalized trend going on here. The how do I begin with? Let me put it this way. I'm going to talk about something that is not overtly problematic, but the topic is, and it could be bothersome to your children if they're below, say, the age of about middle school. Okay, so as I always say, fair warning to parents, if you think that this topic is, because it's going to get into the San Francisco Gay Men's Choir and a message that they just released. And you're going to hear a little bit of it, and I'm going to comment on it. But it might be troubling for kids who don't even know that this world exists. So fair warning, if you need to turn the radio down for 4 or 5 minutes, go ahead and do that. Fair warning, Cyrus isn't here today. Ready, steady, go.
So the San Francisco Pride.
Well, hang on. Easy, Jim. Easy, big fella. Easy. The San Francisco Gay Men's Choir, they have released a new song, and you're going to hear a little bit of it. Your ears will start to bleed after a while, so I'm not going to subject you to that kind of torture. But this is the whole choir. It starts off with one guy, and then he's joined by a second guy, and then by the time you get halfway into it, you've got the whole, I mean, I don't know how many guys are in this choir. 50, 100, it's hard to say, but it's like the Brady Bunch on steroids because each one of them has their own little window and they're all stacked up and side to side. And they're all singing a song and they're serenading you parents. Please understand this. The San Francisco Gay Men's Choir is serenading you with this song that is called We're Coming for Your Children. Now, you may say, oh, come on, this has to be a spoof. This has to be... The Onion, or this has to be the Babylon. It's not. That's what's so weird about this. And with a wink and a nudge, you know, all the smirking that's going on, they realize, and I think this may be why they decided to release this song, they realize that you have concerns about this agenda and that you don't want your children unnecessarily exposed to these matters before it's necessary that they know about them. And they're aware of that, and they've heard all the slogans about, you know, the gay agenda, and they're trying to subvert our children, and they've heard all those things, so they turned it into a song, and they're actually saying that to you as the parent. So take a listen. This is the San Francisco Gay Men's Choir, and they're singing the song We're Coming for Your Children.
As we celebrate Pride and the progress we've made over these past years, there's still work to be done. So to those of you out there who are still working against equal rights, we have a message for you.
You think we're sinful? You fight against our rights. You say we all lead lives you can't respect. But you're just frightened. You think that we'll corrupt your kids if our agenda goes unchecked. Funny, just this once, you're correct. We'll convert your children. Happens bit by bit, quietly and subtly, and you will barely notice it. You can keep him from disco, warn about San Francisco, make him wear pleated pants, we don't care. We'll convert your children. We'll make them tolerant and fair.
At first, I didn't get why you'd be so scared of us turning your children into accepting, caring people, but I see now why you'd have a problem.
Just like you worried, they'll change their group of friends. You won't approve of where they go at night to protest. Oh, and you'll be disgusted.
So gross.
When they start finding things online that you've kept far from their sight.
Like information.
Guess what? You'll still be alright. We'll convert your children. Yes, we will.
Reaching one and all, there's really no escaping it.
Cause even grandma likes RuPaul.
And the world's getting kinder. Gen Z's gayer than Grindr.
Learn to love, learn to vote,
right.
Face your face.
Alright, I think that's, I mean, are your ears bleeding yet? I think that's about enough. But you get the idea. And if you listen to the lyrics closely, and I'm going to share them with you, I'm going to read them to you, you see that they're very serious, and they're doing it in a campy, playful way, of course, as is their wont, but they're very serious. And you know what? They're right. No, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying they're right to do what they're doing. I'm just saying that they are successful in doing this. They are converting your children. This has been a steady drip, drip, drip for a long time now. I talked to a caller on this program, I don't know, a week or so ago, and I raised the issue of a TV sitcom back in the 70s called Soap. And if you're not old enough to remember that, you can look it up. Soap. Billy Crystal was one of the main actors, and he was rather unknown at that time. That was his big breakthrough role, and he was the first gay character on network television. It caused a big stir. Like, what? How is that happening? Well, that's where the door opened, and the normalization of this ideology, of this lifestyle, etc., began in earnest, and it never looked back, and it's been growing in its intensity ever since then. And they know it, and they're correct in what they're saying. I believe that they have made the wrong choice, obviously, but I'm not here to control anybody. But you notice that the words that they use here are suggestive that you are intolerant because you oppose this. Let me read you the lyrics of this song. And by the way, my phone number is 888-914-9149. I'm just going to read you the lyrics straight through. You think we're sinful. You fight against our rights. You say we all lead lives you can't respect, but you're just frightened. See, you can't disagree with somebody on the merits or demerits of their argument. They have to hurl epithets at you and say, oh, you're just frightened, or you're just phobic, or you just don't understand. No, I'm not frightened. I'm not phobic. I do understand, but I disagree. So I won't interrupt anymore. So here, you say we all lead lives you can't respect, but you're just frightened. You think we'll corrupt your kids if our agenda goes unchecked. Funny, just this once you're correct. We'll convert your children. Happens bit by bit, quietly and subtly, and you will barely notice it. You can keep them from disco, warn about San Francisco, make them wear pleated pants. We don't care. We'll convert your children. We'll make them tolerant and fair. Just like you worried. They'll change their group of friends. You won't approve of where they go at night to protests. Oh, and you'll be disgusted. So gross, the guy says in the background. You'll be so disgusted when they start finding things online that you've kept them far, that you've kept far from their sight, like information. Guess what? You'll still be all right. We'll convert your children, reaching one and all. There's really no escaping it, because even grandma likes RuPaul. And the world's getting kinder. Gen Z's gayer than Grindr. Learn to love, learn to vogue, face your fate. We'll convert your children. Someone's got to teach them not to hate. We're coming for them. We're coming for your children. We're coming for them. We're coming for them. We're coming for your children. For your children. Your children will care about fairness and justice for others. Your children will work to convert all their sisters and brothers. Then soon, we're almost certain, your kids will start converting you. The gay agenda is coming home. The gay agenda is here. But you don't have to worry, because there's nothing wrong with standing by our side. Get on board in a hurry, because the world always needs a bit more pride. But you don't have to worry, because there's nothing wrong with standing by our side. The gay agenda. Get on board in a hurry, because the world always needs a bit more pride. The gay agenda. Come on, try a little pride. We'll convert your children. Then we'll turn to you. Giving up the fear inside is freeing like you never knew. Go and see San Francisco. Go and turn up that disco. You'll forget you were ever upset. We'll convert your children and make an ally of you yet. We'll make an ally of you yet. We'll make an ally of you yet. So, those are the lyrics of the song. Now, I don't think it's necessary that I editorialize on that. If nothing else, I think it's sufficient to bring it to your attention and make you aware of it. But this is not something new. I mean, the song is new, it seems to me. But this itself is nothing new. And they're simply putting to music what we've been seeing happening for, lo, these many years. And it's just taken on a new, more overt form now. And we'll get a link to this so you can see it for yourself. The number is 888-914-9149. Let's go to Kim in Ohio. Hi, Kim.
I just can't believe that when I called in, this has been on my heart for something my daughter dealt with, and that you're actually speaking about this morning. I was like, I called in before I even heard that you were playing this song. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is a God thing.
Oh, so you were aware of it already?
I wasn't aware of the song, but just what's going on in our society. And I was actually calling in for help as a parent. My daughter is involved in a theater group, a very small theater group. We're in a little suburb of Ohio, small town. And, you know, she's been confronted with having to deal with this issue. She's 15 years old. And she, you know, wants to be a good Christian, wants to love others. And she came home last night just in tears. And I asked her what was wrong. And there are two girls in her theater group who want to be identified by their pronouns. Now, when she first mentioned this to me, I have to admit that I wasn't even quite sure what that meant. I just knew it had to do with right. all the gender confusion, the gender identity. And as a parent,
let me interrupt here. If you look on social media, Kim, you will find that it's becoming more common now, especially on Twitter, also on Facebook, for people in their description of themselves to put their pronouns. They, them, he, her, he, him, or she, her, rather, he, him. So this is becoming a trend now. And I've actually gotten to the point where as soon as I see that, I'm tempted to block that person because I realize that ideology has infected them. I don't always give in to that temptation, mm-hmm. but that's what that's referring to. In other words, what are your pronouns that you want to be called by? Because obviously right. you can decide what your sex is and all that. So that's where that's coming from.
So, you know, I thought in order, you know, to handle this, she's like, I don't know what to call them. I said, well, call them by their name. Call them by their names that they were given, you know, and pray for them. Let's pray for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anyway, so that was a couple weeks ago. Last night she came home and she said, they both changed their names now, Mom. And my heart went into my stomach and she's confused because, mm-hmm. you know, she wants to love and accept, but this is going against, this is not their name. So how, Patrick, I'm calling because how is a parent, you know, as I listened to the song, you know, how as a parent, I want to teach my children to speak the truth in love and to not take part in the division. And I want to teach them that sometimes speaking the truth in love actually means speaking, not just not saying anything. So I guess my question is twofold. Do you have any resources for us as parents who maybe this isn't in our face because we're not on social media, so we don't see this all the time, yet it's here.
Good for
it
you.
Is here.
Yeah, it's here in force. There's no question about it. And it sounds like your home is a little bit more secured and locked down than most other homes are, Kim. But even, as you say, even still, it's getting in. Well, do I have some resources? Yeah. First of all, this program and the rest of Relevant Radio, I would encourage you, and if your daughter has time during the day to listen, even if it's just by podcast, she can listen. And we have lots of resources in terms of segments on our programming that deal with this very issue. So it's easy to do a word search at relevantradio.com. So if you want to search my program, go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, and you can do a word search for, you know, pick the words that describe the situation, and almost certainly we will have covered it in some way, and you can listen to it, and maybe if it's appropriate, let her listen to it. I would recommend a book. If you're really interested in finding out how this happened and why this is happening, I would read a book called After the Ball. Now, that's at home in my personal library, but I don't have it here in the studio. But it is the blueprint that was given by two authors, the ones who wrote the book. They give the blueprint for how they planned to do this. And this is written in 1991, if I'm not mistaken. And when I read it, I thought, oh my gosh, they're really not only serious about this, but they have a systematic, strategic plan to make this happen. And they did. Now, it's not just these two guys. They're just like writing about what the general feeling was among people in that community, but what they wrote was in some ways prophetic in a non-Christian sort of way. So if you want the, kind of the roots of this, at least in the last, say, 30, 40 years or so, that would be a book to read. I'd also recommend a book by Abigail Schreier. It's called Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Seducing of Our Daughters. Now, I would get this book while you can. I realize that the transgender issue is not directly it's not directly what your daughter is dealing with, but it will be in due time. And this book will help her gain her footing to understand not only the phenomenon itself, but what can you, as somebody who doesn't agree with it, what can you say? How can you defend yourself? Another book like it is called When Harry Became Sally by Dr. Ryan Anderson, also a very good book. And you know when a book is effective because that's when those books start to be obliterated online. And when Amazon won't give a listing for it and you can't find it through a Google search, even though it's right there, that's usually a sign that they're afraid of it because they don't have a way to respond to it. They don't have a way to refute it. Another resource would be a two-hour mock debate that I did with Father Mike Schmitz, and it's available on YouTube. We did this 4 or 5 years ago at Franciscan University's Defending the Faith Conference. And it was a debate on same-sex marriage. And Father Mike Schmitz took the Catholic position explaining why and how, what makes a marriage and what isn't a marriage. I took the position of defending and promoting so-called same-sex marriage, which is not a position I hold, obviously. But when you do a collegiate debate like that, sometimes you're assigned a position that you don't agree with. But I did as I did a I worked very hard, I'll put it that way, to represent this position as well as I possibly could and as vigorously as I possibly could within the time frame that I had. And this included watching all their videos, reading their books, reading the online articles, and really trying to immerse myself in their arguments, biblically and otherwise. So I present many of them in this debate. So check that out. Watch that with your daughter. I think that would be very helpful for her. And Father Mike Schmitz did a great job of demolishing my position, if you ask me. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
I've got something great for you, and it's free, which is even better. Starting today, July the 8th, The Treasures of the Rosary, Reflections by Those Who Pray It Daily, is a new book. It's going to be offered to you absolutely free when you go to relevantradio.com/treasures. So if you're not in front of your computer or your phone right now, just jot that down, relevantradio.com/treasures. Now, this, when I say free, I mean free. The book is free. It's about, I think it's about 130 pages. I haven't seen my copy yet, but it's the book is free. It's a real book, not a you know, electronic book. The shipping and the handling is free. So you don't pay anything for anything, but you get the free book. But in order to get it, you need to go to relevantradio.com/treasures. This is a compilation of reflections on the rosary that were selected by Father Rocky, including mysteries of St. Jose Maria, St. John Paul II's apostolic letter on the rosary, 54-day novena rosary reflections, the litany of Our Lady of Loreto, also information on how to pray the rosary, the Hail Holy Queen, the Memorare. Those are all in there. There's also a great deal of beautiful imagery in this book. So it's not just text. There's also some beautiful pictures. So all you have to do to get your free copy, and it's one per household, by the way, just go to relevantradio.com/treasures. Now, the reason I'm encouraging you to do so quickly, or at least don't delay too long, is because there is a limited quantity of this book. And as we saw in the last time we released a book, such as Drew's I can't think of the term, his Divine Mercy book, that just, it was amazing how many, I think it was over 100,000, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in that range, and they almost went all at once, and once they were out, So don't miss out. This is a beautiful new book. Father Rocky curated all this information. And by the way, when you go there and do this, there's a place there at relevantradio.com/treasures where you can actually forward the information to friends and family. So if you'd like them, if you want your kids at college to have this free book, you're not going to sign up for them on the website. That's for you. But you can forward it to them with a button that's there so that you can let them get their free book. Free for everyone as long as supplies last. Again, go to relevantradio.com/treasures. Let's go back to the phones now. Let's go to RJ in San Francisco. Hi, RJ.
Patrick, I was, this is really sad. Ahead of this, we already know the high increase in infection, rectal infection and cancer with underage boys and children. And then, abortion was against the law in the 60s.
Let me pause you because I don't know what you just said. I mean, are you citing a study? I'm not arguing with you, and I'm not denying that what you said is true. I'm just not aware that there's some widespread problem in that regard among young children. Do you have some info that shows that there is?
Well, what I'm doing is from information that I've received from people within the church that I go to.
Okay.
But abortion was against the law in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Sex with a minor is against the law. This is even worse. How do we handle this? Do we boycott the industries? And I think that the medical industry should come into play here. Because
how so?
They have the information about what I talked about first. I don't want to repeat it.
But, no, I think I understand. But, so you're referring to the medical scientific data with regard to the incidence or the rate of these infectious diseases and other problems among, let's say, the gay male community, the homosexual community. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, you have to understand, and I'm sympathetic to what you're saying, but you have to understand that medicine has been co-opted by this. It's no longer objective when it comes to these kinds of issues. So you're not likely to. I mean, you can find the data. You can go to The Lancet and the American Journal or the Journal of American Medicine. You can go to these places and drill down and find the information because it's there. But I don't think we can reasonably expect people in that world of medicine to be leading the charge for getting the word out. And the reason is because so many of the scientists, they rely upon grants. And a lot of the grants come from big dollar organizations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which lavishes money on causes that they like. But if you're out there saying this is not good and here's the evidence to prove it, you'll be out of a job pretty quickly and you won't get any grant money. So there is a cause and effect relationship there. But my point is, to your question, what can we do about this? I'm not a pessimist by nature, RJ. I'm not a glasses half empty kind of guy. I'm more of a glasses half full kind of guy. But I got to tell you, I don't think this can be fixed right now. I don't think it can be fixed. It's too far gone. The rot has gone too far and too deep. You've got that problem in terms of the intensity of the push to normalize this. But you also have a vast number of people who are utterly apathetic about it. You know, maybe there are some people who are still willing to, you know, stand up and say, I don't agree with that. But most people are no longer willing to do that. Most people are now supine and they are just letting it roll over them because they don't want the consequences if they stand up against it. So what can we do? But I don't think we can do anything about that. That's God's job, not mine. There's nothing I can do to fix that problem. And I hope that God doesn't use the same methodology that he chose in the book of Genesis with Sodom and Gomorrah. I certainly don't wish that upon anybody, but God has his own ways. But for me and for you, especially if you're a parent, and I'm speaking to all of you parents right now, teach your children well, as the song says. Teach your children well. Inculcate in them not only a clear understanding of what marriage is between a man and a woman and explain to them as they become old enough to understand it. And that might mean you have to educate yourself on this issue, but explain to them the natural law, for example, which transcends and is before any religious. So it's not a Catholic thing. It's not a Christian thing. It's the realization that things have goals and purposes. And when you use something, let's say, for example, your body, if you use it in a way that is contrary to its goal-orientedness, its end, its purpose, what it's designed to do, if you use your body in a way that's contrary to that, eventually you're going to destroy your body. It may not happen all at once, but it will happen. Now, we don't need to get into some of the grosser details of how that happens in this regard, but as your children are old enough to begin to assimilate some of this information, and what a shame it is that you even have to talk about this to them, but here we are. That's my first bit of advice, RJ, is parents especially, teach your children well. And I'm not saying teach them to be intolerant. No, teach them to love, teach them to be respectful. All the things that the people in that group are not toward us. They, you know, they're always tub thumping and they're always hooping and hollering and with their signs and placards and all that about tolerance and love. But yet they will be the first ones to be intolerant and even brutal toward those who disagree with them. And they call them names and they deplatform them and they try to get them fired and they try to censor or eliminate their books from public view. Or the outlaw so-called conversion therapy. If somebody doesn't want to go down that road and they could use some help, well, they've managed now to criminalize that kind of counseling. They're not tolerant. They're not diverse. They're not about love. They're about their agenda, and they're masquerading with all of this cosmetics to make it appear as though they're the ones who are the champions of love and tolerance when it's exactly the opposite. So back to the issue of training your children. Train your children well, but train them to be good Christians. In other words, to love other people, to be respectful, to be charitable. And that includes, by the way, speaking the truth in love. Now, not every child is up to that. Not every adult is up to doing that. Not every adult has the constitution or the temperament to be able to do that. But each of us can do what we can do. And you can begin, if you're a parent, by teaching your children the art of speaking the truth in love, as I say, being respectful, etc. But you have to teach them that, because if you don't teach them that and they get into, well, look at the fifth graders in the Chicago public school system, they're being handed condoms now. What on earth is a fifth grade kid going to do with a condom? Well, if the people who are pushing this nonsense have their way, they're going to make sure that the five-year-old kid knows not only how to use a condom, but has all the encouragement that he needs to go out and use that condom. Because, hey, there's more condoms where that came from. You see what I'm saying? So we're up against a huge, very militant, very active, it's evangelical, and I say that not in a religious sense. It is evangelical in its fervor for trying to convert people. You just heard the San Francisco Gay Men's Choir say, "We're coming for your children." Now, they're saying it in a campy, tongue-in-cheek way. Ha ha, isn't this clever? I know what they're doing, but it's still true. And they really mean it. So that's the first advice. Teach your children well. Second thing, and I'll leave it at this. We have to take a break. I'll leave it. And by the way, thank you for your call, RJ. Appreciate it. Second thing is this. Take a cue from the early church. If you were to consider the circumstances that you would have faced as a Christian in, let's say, third century Rome, it was grotesque beyond anything that we see here in this civilization, this culture that we live in here. Yeah, I mean, things can be pretty bad, obviously. It was worse. It was much worse in the early Roman Empire. And the lewdness and the reprehensible things that were done in the streets, I don't think I have to get into it too much. The spectacles, the gladiator combats, the putting people to death for pleasure. People would go and paid money for their bread and circuses, or they were actually given their bread and circuses, but they would go and they would watch as a form of entertainment as people would be slaughtered, because for them that was super cool. Hey, look at that. The killing of wild animals, etc. So it was a really ugly, violent, decadent, gross environment. And the Christians, you know what they did? They thrived. And you know why they thrived? Because they did not take up arms. They had no power whatsoever other than the power of their witness to the truth of Jesus Christ. Now, many of them were martyrs, but most of them weren't. And most of them managed to live through this very decadent, gross situation because they taught their children well. They themselves were faithful, at least to the extent that they were. They stayed close to Christ. They spoke the truth in love, and they just kept going forward. Tertullian, he wrote a monumental work called De Spectaculis, which means on the shows or on the spectacles. And in it, he told Christians, don't go to the arenas. Don't go and watch this stuff. Because when you do, and you're buying into this, and you're participating, even just by being a spectator, you're part of the problem. So it might be good to get a modern English translation of De Spectaculis by Tertullian available for people to read. So that's my other and last bit of advice. Batten the hatches. If there's stuff coming into your home through the television programs and the music and the movies and the other ways in which this culture with this message is getting into your children's heads, then shut that down. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. I could talk for hours on this topic, but I'll leave it at that. I'm overdue for a break, so here we go. I'm coming right back to your phone calls. My number is 888-914-9149. Please stay right there.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Okay, let's continue. Let's go to Francis now, listening in. All right, we don't have Francis. Let's go to Chris in New Jersey. Hi, Chris. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. Morning.
Good morning.
My question is about the culpability of our brothers and sisters with same-sex attraction who engage in homosexual acts. Mm-hmm. In the Catechism 2357, it says psychological genesis of same-sex attraction remains largely unexplained. Now, scientific research provides us with a better understanding of this condition, couldn't that lead to the conclusion that our brothers and sisters with same-sex attraction who engage in homosexual acts are less...
Chris, I'm having a hard time understanding you. Are you saying if there is some, let's say, organic or genetic predisposition toward this, then they would not be culpable?
Would they be less free to choose the right behavior?
Okay, like, I don't think so.
Well, the comparison would be with suicide. At one time, the church, suicide was clearly labeled mortal sin. Mm-hmm. There was no question about it. But with scientific research,
it still is labeled mortal sin.
Yeah.
But maybe what you're saying, Chris, which I would agree with, is that the church emphasizes more now than maybe it ever did before, and that is the extenuating circumstances that can drive somebody to that despair that would greatly mitigate their culpability or maybe even eliminate their culpability. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. In the Catechism 2282.
Yeah, no.
Grave
okay,
psychological
yeah.
disturbances. Yeah.
So let me answer the question as I understood it. So you're saying, could this mean that they would, you know, maybe not be culpable of this? I think the answer must be no, because homosexual people are no different from heterosexual people in the regard that we're all called to holiness. So let's just take the case of a heterosexual. Okay, I'll volunteer. Okay, I'm heterosexual. I'm attracted to the opposite sex. That's how God made me. And my whole adult life anyway, from the time I was an adolescent forward, I have had a very keen interest in, well, now my wife, of course, because I'm married. But my attraction is for the opposite sex. And as most people experience it, that attraction can sometimes become very aggressive. Not, I don't mean aggressive in a negative sense. It could become very powerful. It could become very urgent. And it doesn't matter how God made you in this regard. What matters in this regard is that you say no to those impulses when it's inappropriate. So there would be, I don't think, any case that could be made to say, well, look at this heterosexual guy. I mean, that's how God made him. It's genetic. He has this natural predisposition for women. So I guess he's off the hook if he decides to, you know, go running wild and do whatever he wants to do. We would all say, no, of course not. He still has to exercise restraint. He has to exercise self-control like we all do. So I don't think it's fair, and I'm not accusing you of unfairness, but I don't think it's fair to somehow like pigeonhole homosexual people and say, you know, because of their proclivities, therefore they, you know, they're unable to live like other people live. No, of course they're able to live. We're all able to live this way if we simply have the desire to do so. So the key is not so much the inclination, but keep in mind that the inclination itself is disordered because it's not tending toward, well, anyway, I won't get too far into that, but except to say what really ultimately results in one's culpability is if you freely, willingly act on something. And I would say the same is true for heterosexual people as it is for homosexual people in this regard. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just speculation that I was just wondering that.
Well, do you see it a little more? I mean, maybe from my perspective, a little more clearly now.
The bigger picture is holiness, and but I just was wondering if there would be some they would diminish the culpability because of this.
I don't think it would. For the reasons I mentioned. No. Well, okay, I hope you don't mind me asking this question, Chris. Are you heterosexual?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Now, let me just ask about you personally. You're heterosexual. Are you free to just go and act upon your heterosexual impulses whenever and with whomever you want to?
No.
Why not?
No.
God made you that way. And if you did do that, let's say you went on a binge and you were running wild for a while and you came home and tried to explain this to your wife, would you say, well, I mean, I really don't have any culpability because this is how God made me and I'm genetically predisposed for this. So don't give me a hard time because, you know, I'm not really culpable. You would never say that, would you?
No, no, no.
So why should a homosexual be able to say that when the heterosexual can't?
Yeah, we all have to exercise self-control.
Bingo. Bingo. That's it. We're all called to holiness. Yeah. And, you know, the differential here, if you ask me, Chris, is that that lifestyle presupposes promiscuity as a matter of fact. It's not to say that every single person will be promiscuous, although perhaps many are, but the fact is it sort of presupposes I'm free to do anything I want with whoever I want, and you can't tell me that it's wrong. That's not how the world operates. Certainly not how the gospel operates. So we have to be clear on that, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm not trying to badger you, Chris. I'm really not. I'm just, I think if
I agree with you. And God gives us the desire for holiness and for it.
Yeah, that's right? True. That's true, Chris. Well, thank you. Thanks for calling. It's an important topic. As an addendum to that, I'll just say this. What about your friend who, and I don't mean you, Chris. Thanks for the call. What about your friend who drinks too much? And you can see that it's a real problem and she's an alcoholic. And you say, you know, you shouldn't do that. It's bad for you. She says, well, this is how God made me. It makes me feel good. All my friends do it. I like it. I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not doing anything illegal. I never get behind the wheel of a car. I do this in the privacy of my own home. I'm a consenting adult. I don't have to, you know, flaunt it or anything, but I like doing this. And you and I would say, well, but still, you shouldn't do it because it's bad for you. It's harming you. Now, in this culture, it's A-okay, and in fact, you'll be considered a hero if you try and intervene with a friend who is an alcoholic. and try to get her to see that continuing this behavior is bad for her, even though God made her that way, even though it makes her happy, even though it makes her feel good, even though all her friends do it, even though she's a consenting adult, even though she's doing it in the privacy of her own home, even though she's not doing anything to harm anyone else, and why is it your business anyway? You would be celebrated in this culture for saying, even so, you still shouldn't do it. Because it's been accepted that alcoholism is one of those things that deserves and people need to be helped with. But heaven help you if you were to take the same approach to somebody who had, let's say, same-sex attraction. And you would be called names and you would be scorned and possibly even attacked, all in the name of diversity, of course, all in the name of acceptance and inclusion. Intolerance, of course, they will attack you because you're the one somehow being intolerant, when in fact all you're doing is trying to help by way of disagreeing. So anyway, those are my thoughts on that. We have to take a break, but I'm coming right back. Hour two is about to start. We have full lines, well, almost full lines, but if you get a busy signal, just hit redial. The number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.